You got it!
Like some of the proposed solutions that's coming from the grassroots level.
I'm George Lavender, and this is Making Contact.
You got it!
More than 150,000 people sign up for the US military every year. Their reasons for joining vary widely, from those hoping for financial help through college to others looking to follow in the footsteps of parents or grandparents. In recent years, getting into the military has gotten harder, with criminal records and low academic scores providing the biggest barriers. As hard as getting in might be, though, getting out of the military may be harder still. On this edition of Making Contact, we'll hear radio adaptations of two documentaries about soldiers who tried to leave the military. In Michelle Mason's film, Breaking Ranks, produced by Screen Siren Pictures and the National Film Board of Canada, we follow four US soldiers who sought sanctuary in Canada after refusing to fight in Iraq. While some of those who refused to be deployed in Iraq have been allowed to stay in Canada as refugees, others were deported and later sentenced to military prison in the US.
Train to kill!
Jeremy Hinsman was one of the first to seek asylum in Canada after the start of the Iraq War.
I had been in the army for a year and a half, and I was living the dream, so to say. I mean, I was living a lie, but I was living the dream in terms of my career progression. I was getting promoted ahead of time. I had this job of a lot of responsibility, and my superiors liked me. I was about to go to Ranger School, and I had been having all these conflicting thoughts. I mean, I was trying to be the good soldier, but I was realizing it's wrong, essentially.
The war in Iraq had kicked off, I guess you could say, a couple months before I left for basic training. I figured, you know, I'd be doing my patriotic duty, I guess you could say. And after 9/11, you know, that's what everyone thought, you know, going into the U.S. military would be an honorable thing to do. So I had figured, you know, I'd be doing my part for my country and I'd be going to fight terrorism.
That's Brandon Huey.
George Bush had said the reason he had invaded that country was because they had possessed this massive arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, and that Saddam Hussein was connected to Al-Qaeda. And obviously, you know, they proved out to be lies. I grew up in San Angelo, Texas. A small town, I guess, about 85,000 people. And I was just basically an average high school kid. I made decent grades and always kind of quiet, I guess you could say. Basically, I was 17, so I didn't have any money. And my dad was in debt, so there was no way that he was going to be able to help me out with college. So basically, I had two options, student loans or the U.S. military. So one day, I'd been called out of the blue by a recruiter for the U.S. military, and he told me you could just sign up to do a few years in the military and we'll pay for all of your college and you'll get these great benefits, and depending on what job you select, we can offer you a big signing bonus and put money in your pocket right out of basic training. So it seemed like a good decision financially.
If you want to sign up for the military, you'll first meet a recruiter, like Sergeant Brian Jensen.
Everybody enlists for different reasons. You know, some people need money for college. They just can't afford it. They can't get enough money to go to school. Some people want a certain type of job training. You have other people that all they want to do is travel. They want to go see Europe. They want to go see, you know, Asia, stuff like that. And then you have other people that just want to wear the uniform. Ever since they were a little kid, all they want to do is serve their country and be in the Army. So, I mean, there's various reasons, and everybody is different. They all have different reasons. It just, you know, you got to find that one reason.
Well, I grew up in farm country of Oklahoma, a little town called Guthrie. Just basically a rural community. You know, you was miles away from any civilization, I used to call it. Your nearest neighbor was about a mile and a half away.
That's Joshua Key. When he was 20 years old, he married Brandy.
On Friday and Saturdays, what the teenagers do is there's one big long strip, and there's like a McDonald's, Sonic, Walmart, different stores, and you pull in and just everybody hangs out in the parking lots and stuff. And I met him on a Friday night at Taco Mayo parking lot. I asked him if I could ride with him to the next place we were going, and then we just been together ever since.
It's rough living in Oklahoma even now. You don't really make too much and you have to live on what you got. Dead-end jobs. After time went, I guess we'd been married about 3 years. I was like, well, I guess the only option is to join the military. Because there you get money for college, you'll get your steady pay, and then you get, of course you get to travel, but I always figured, you know, travel to the third countries. You know, you don't never get to go nowhere nice.
From Oklahoma to Colorado, where Kyle Snyder spent his childhood.
I grew up in Colorado Springs. My father was in the military for about 8 years, and he was stationed in Fort Carson for a while. Well, my father was a pretty abusive man, and he had cheated on my mother. My sister would go on to live with my mother, and I would live with my father. Well, my father was still abusive when I lived with him, so I decided to run away.
Well, he didn't live with me. He made a choice to go live with his dad. That didn't work out quite so well.
That's Crystal Snyder, Kyle's mom.
So he kind of ran the streets for several years. And by the time he wanted to come back and live with me, he had tested things that weren't very good choices. And there was no way that I could even handle him at that point.
I was just being young and rebellious. I couldn't understand why I was going through all of this, why I couldn't see my sister or my mother. I dropped out of high school and I moved away from my foster home when I was about 17. And I went to a program called Job Corps in Clearfield, Utah. I had just received my high school diploma. I was walking the stage. Happier than hell, man. You know, I had finally done something for my life. I get off of the stage, and here's an Army recruiter right outside of the door waiting for me.
Go!
The Army is one of the largest corporations in the United States.
Again, Sergeant Brian Jensen.
We hire 100, 150,000 people a year. Imagine a Walmart. You know, they hire people every year just like we do. People quit Walmart every year just like people do their time, and they get out just like they do at Walmart. We have an interview process, just like they do at Walmart. Now, our qualifications are a lot different. They're a lot more stringent. We have to qualify people a lot different than Walmart does. But our business practices and our business, you know, the contractual things that we do and stuff like that, they're no different. They're the same thing.
I look back at it now. And everything that I'm going through, everything that I went through, I could retrace down to that moment that I signed that contract.
Jeremy Hinsman also joined the military for help with school fees.
I joined the military out of pragmatic reasons, first of all, because I couldn't afford university and there wasn't really a lot in the way of financial aid to help me go to university. And of course, the military's big selling point is a lot of money for college, but also I wanted to be a part of something that was bigger than myself and that transcended myself.
I think he wanted to go to college, and I never could afford to help him go.
Really, it sounds corny, but I think he was trying to make a better life. You know, there's not a lot of stuff here. You know, I make 10 bucks an hour, and that's a good job.
So I felt, hey, you know, I'll join the Army, sell my soul for 4 years, as bad as it sounds, and see what happens. But I chose the infantry, and I knew what the infantry did. You know in the back of your mind, or you know, I mean, it's even in the fore of your mind, especially in the infantry, that you can see combat. But I honestly didn't know, like, how great a barrier I would have to killing people. I really thought I could be trained to do it. It's not like I had a burning desire to do it, but the training's there for a reason, to help you overcome your hurdles. And as hard as I tried, I couldn't do it.
I think even like in his letters writing back to me from boot camp, he noticed like the kind of like brainwashing of the group mentality and all those things, and I think he tried to suppress his unease about it. But you know, the more he stayed in, the more he could see that, you know, this wasn't it. You know, he couldn't do it.
You know, I felt like I was losing what makes me human. I was turning into Pavlov's dog, you know? There's a signal. Let's go. Go sick 'em.
Go.
Jeremy Hinsman wasn't the only one who began to regret their decision in boot camp. Again, Brandon Huey.
I had my second thoughts in basic training, but I figured everyone did, and that was just a normal occurrence. I learned the hard way that after you sign up, the Army can basically back out of every promise they make to you, but you're expected to keep yours, of course. So I never saw my signing bonus, and I asked about it frequently when I got to my first base, and whenever I would do that, they would make a comment like, well, you should be more concerned with doing your duty with the money we're paying you. So they wouldn't even give me the papers to fill out. I had told my superiors on more than one occasion that I had wished to seek a discharge from the military. I had told them my views on the war in Iraq, and, you know, the military wasn't what I thought. I was lied to by my recruiters, and I just wanted to basically start over. And he basically said there was no way he was going to release me, and there was nothing that I could do, no steps that I could take to seek a discharge from the military, and I was going to do what they told me to, whether I had liked it or not. And it's hard to describe to someone what that feels like if you've never been in that situation, but you feel like your back is up against the wall, basically.
What do soldiers do when they want to leave the military but aren't allowed to? We'll find out after the break. You've been listening to an excerpt from Breaking Ranks, produced by Screen Siren Pictures and the National Film Board of Canada.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Because of generous support from listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the US, Canada, and Australia. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact.
Up next, we hear a radio adaptation of the film Deserter, produced by Big Noise Films and PM Press, and directed by Rick Rowley. Deserter tells the story of Ryan Johnson, a young soldier from California's Central Valley who in 2005 chose to desert rather than be deployed to Iraq. Along with his wife Jen, Johnson crossed the border into Canada. This is his story.
Anyway, hotline, this is Lynn.
Hi, I found out my unit's deploying to Iraq tomorrow. I can't go and I don't know what to do.
Well, I do have to tell you that by law I am not permitted to encourage you to go AWOL. You would be charged with missing movement, undoubtedly. After 30 days missing, you're listed as a deserter. You would go out on a national warrant list. For your own protection, you'd be well advised to not be at your home of record.
Yeah, well, my wife and I were thinking about maybe going to Canada.
Going to Canada is a life-changing thing. I would really suggest that you spend some time at home and make that decision carefully, and we can talk in the coming days if should you make the decision to go AWOL.
Okay, we've got to get out of here tonight. If I call this number again, how can I get a hold of you?
I can give you our direct phone number, and you can ask for Lynn, and I can return a call within 24 hours.
Yeah, I was living here when I joined the military. I couldn't get a job that would support a place to live and food. And two of my friends joined the Navy. One of my friends joined the Air Force. One of my friends joined the Marines. And that's the only jobs they could get is military. They said that I wouldn't have to go to Iraq. You know, they said that I'd be on a base. Then I got to my duty station, and they told me that I'd be going to Iraq. So here I am, my sergeant. He's supposed to leave in March because they wanted the medication. They're getting him to start working. He couldn't sleep at night. He doesn't think he's ever killed anybody while he's over there, but he saw his buddies, you know, getting their arms blown off and shot in the head and stuff. Having to carry, you know, his dead friends out, watching his driver run over little children. He's over there a second time. And I didn't know I could do it. Another person I met when he got back, his wife had planned a trip to Disney World before he left. And he got back and they went to Disney World, and he was just freaked out because of all the crowds of people. He couldn't stand it. He stayed in the hotel room. He went the first day, and the rest of the time he stayed in his hotel room because he couldn't function in public. They just give him, you know, Prozac and you know, Ambien or something to go to sleep. But you know, that doesn't help the memories. I check on the internet all the time. Three people that I worked with have died since we've been there. There's been one RPG attack on a watchtower, and one truck hit a IED that blew up underneath him and tore his leg up. I guess he died from bleeding.
Wow. And that would be your job, to drive back and forth on that road?
Yeah, I'd be patrolling in Baghdad, driving on that road, picking up parts from other camps.
Hello?
Lynn?
Yes?
This is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So, you have some ideas about things, huh?
We were just talking about it. Not necessarily
yeah.
Gone.
The thing is, it's going to alter your life, right? It's going to alter your life. The Midwest supporter, it becomes a whole other level as far as the way the Army sees it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you understand that, right?
Yeah.
That you are really deserting your country in wartime. You never plan to come back, and you really are turning your back on your country, basically. And that's how they see it. Why don't you think about what I've said, and then if you've got more specific things you want to talk about, I'm always here.
Okay.
And if you want me to set up an opportunity for you to talk to some of the guys that know up there.
I don't know if you'll understand this. It's hard enough for me to understand it, and harder to find a way to say it. So I'm writing it down to keep it all straight. I don't understand this war, but I've seen what it's done to the guys who've come back, and that scares me. I don't think I'm a coward, and I don't want to desert my friends or my unit, but I'm not going to kill for this war, and I'm not going to die for it. Jen and I are going to Canada. I don't know if we'll ever be able to come back. I'm sorry we can't say goodbye. I called the hotline and they say there's a warrant out for my arrest. I won't be able to send you this letter until we get to Toronto. I love and miss you guys, Ryan.
I know people who were draft age during Vietnam time and took off, and they were gone much longer than they ever thought they would be. They talked about, you know, how difficult it was to be able to do that.
Well, a lot of the things that you said were the same consequences that you would have if you went to Iraq. It's not just a year, but the people that go to Iraq never really come back.
Like, I remember feeling really guilty for not thinking about my daughter.
But you couldn't.
I couldn't because I was a squad leader. And thinking about my daughter, just, you know, I felt like breaking down. You dehumanize yourself, not because you want to turn into an animal or a soulless being, but because in order to cope with your reality, you know, you have to push your humanity aside, you know. It was like a different life, you know. It wasn't like part of the same life. You know, you lived in a completely different world, and, you know, that's something that, you know, you don't belong to anymore.
Somebody somewhere had another plan. Now he's got a rifle in his hand, rolling in a bag and wondering how he got this far. Just another poor boy up to fight a rich man's war.
Well, they knew something was different about me when I came back, definitely. But they couldn't put their finger on what it was.
In 3 years, I haven't had a dream that wasn't a nightmare.
They put gasoline on me and lit me on fire. And while I was being burned alive, they, you know, were gonna cut my head off. That's one of the recurring dreams that I've had.
Day-to-day life, I live my life like I'm still in combat. Like I'm still there trying to stay alive. I feel like death is chasing me every day, and it's just waiting to get me again.
I just want to apologize for having this sort of slurred speech, but it's just the medication I was on to get to sleep.
Dear Mom, today I called and told you I was still in San Diego, but really, we're somewhere out on Route 66. After the first night in a hotel, we've been staying in safe houses. All the way up to Toronto, people are giving us places to stay and keep out of sight. Last night we slept out on the Taos Mesa. The air is so clean and thin out here. It's a beautiful country. After all those years stuck in Visalia, it is strange to see all this now, right before we have to leave forever. I love and miss you guys, Ryan.
Hello?
Yes, this is Ryan again.
Oh, hi, Ryan. Okay, so you say you've been on the run for a while.
Yeah.
And so you were concerned about the border?
Yes. I've read on the internet that they might do a warrant check.
If you're coming to Toronto, you might want to check out some of the shows that are playing, things that you're coming up to see and do.
Okay.
Just so you have a good
that way we could be like, yeah, we're going to go see such and such.
Yeah, so if you want to call back either later today or tomorrow, I'll just hop on the internet.
Okay, thank you.
It's a war for oil, a war for money. We're killing people for money and we're dying for nothing. We're just poor people over there dying.
To come from a working class family, we're the ones that are used as cannon fodder. And you have to think to yourself, do you really want to die for a lie?
You don't come back from Iraq. You're gonna ruin your life by going. Go to prison for a year. Who cares? You'll be 3 years in Iraq.
Said God, get me back home to Houston alive, and I won't drive a truck anymore.
One of my good friends, Ellie Painted Crow, she said once that the difference between a warrior and a soldier is that a warrior fights for their heart and a soldier fights for orders. Eventually, you're gonna have to stop being a soldier and start being a warrior. And you gotta follow your heart.
Dear Mom, we broke down outside of Woodstock, but if everything works out, I think we'll cross over tomorrow. It's been strange on this trip. Everywhere we go, I see those yellow ribbon bumper stickers and flags and signs. So many people have sons or daughters or friends over there. They'd probably all think I was a coward. I don't know if you've seen that guy, Camilo Mejia, in the news. He was a sergeant in Iraq who refused to go back a second time. I met him out in San Diego. He wrote a letter trying to explain why he did it. He wrote, "I say without any pride that I did my job as a soldier. I commanded an infantry squad in combat, and we never failed to accomplish our mission. But I was afraid. I was terrified. I did not want to stand up to the government and the army. I was afraid of punishment and humiliation. I went to war because at that moment I was a coward, and for that I apologize to my soldiers for not being the type of leader I should have been." They sentenced him to a year in prison. I'll call you when I get to Toronto. I love and miss you guys, Ryan.
Yeah. Hi, this is Ryan. I spoke to you a while ago.
Yes.
I'm going to be heading over across the border today.
I see. Are you near the border now?
Yeah, I'm just on the other side of it.
All right, so you're going to be driving to Toronto for your visit. When you get here, could you give me another call?
Yes.
We'd definitely like to meet you and all that stuff, but I think we have to be a bit careful about the location.
He looks nervous, I can tell. I can see it in his eyes. I feel like I'm on the tilt-a-whirl.
Ryan Johnson made it over the border into Canada.
Congratulations for coming up.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a realtor from the Vietnam War, so it's great that you guys came up. Congratulations. Great to see you here.
What we usually do is do a go-around. Everybody introduce themselves. My name is Michelle Robidoux, and I'm with the War Resister Support Campaign.
Ivan Brobeck, War Resister.
Brenda Wall with the War Resisters Campaign.
Charlie Duncan, Canadian Foreign Service Committee and Vietnam War Resister.
Ryan Johnson, War Resister. My unit's in Iraq now. They've been there since January 15th, which is the day that I went AWOL. All the stories that I'd heard, I couldn't take part in the things that had happened and that I knew was going to happen when I was over there. So now I'm here.
Hello?
Mom?
Yes?
Hey, this is Ryan. Yeah, I'm in Toronto, Ontario.
Oh, like Canada?
Yeah, like Canada.
You really, you can't come back.
You there?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna let you go, and I'll talk to you again very soon. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Me and Jennifer both love and miss you guys.
Okay.
Bye.
I love you.
I love you too. I'll talk to you soon.
Ryan Johnson with us at the Catholic Worker House. Also, Rob Shearer, who is with Toronto Catholic Worker, part of a network that's helping Ryan and soldiers like him to seek asylum in Canada. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Rob Shearer, can you talk about what this idea of modern-day underground is?
Sure.
From 1965 to 73, there were 50,000 draft-age Americans who made their way to Canada. The Catholic Worker is part of a network committed to making sure that if people want to make decisions based on their conscience to not fight in what is an illegal and immoral war, then we will do our best to support them.
You know, it kind of inspired me that people were doing this. It let me know that there were other people like me that weren't wanting to go to the war. And that there's people just trying to get it out there to, you know, soldiers and civilians alike, letting them know that they're not the only ones that don't believe in it.
And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. You've been listening to a radio version of the 2007 film Deserter from Big Noise Films and PM Press. Like Making Contact on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm George Lavender. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.